Well, let's everyone stand in honor of the scripture, Matthew 5, 10 through 12. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely. For my sake, rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. You may be seated. As you can see on the wall there, this title of this sermon is Jesus, Trump, and Hitler, Three Men in History Falsely Accused. This is the beginning of a World War II series that I wanted to do, and this would be the introductory. What a title, Jesus, Trump, and Hitler, Three Men in History Falsely Accused. In making this comparison, let me say at the outset that in no way am I saying that any man can be an object of worship or sinless as our Lord Jesus Christ. It is obvious that men are not perfect, but we should give credit where credit is due. The idea that Trump or Hitler might be in heaven may be offensive to some, but if the shoe fits, we should put it on. If it can be sufficiently shown that these men have been persecuted for the sake of what is right, then the kingdom of heaven belongs to them. Most of us here are familiar with many conspiracy theories, as dubbed by establishment government and media. Most of us know the truth surrounding the War of 1861 in America. That is, it was not about slavery exclusively, but rather was for political and economic reasons, and ultimately was plotted by the Rothschild banking family. We are aware of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and how it enslaves our people economically through usury, inflation, and tax-collecting agencies. There are other events, the assassination of Vicki Weaver, Waco, the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building, the 9/11 attacks, etc. But there is one official story in recent history that is very difficult for Americans to question, and that is the truth about Adolf Hitler and World War II. Of course, when it comes to a conspiracy theory, the key word is theory, and we must keep in mind that the more evidence we gather, the theory becomes weaker and weaker until it is overcome by the truth. Furthermore, we must understand that fake news did not just start with President Trump, but has been around for a long, long time. My purpose here is to vindicate those who have been wrongly accused of some sort of crime, offense, misconduct, sin, evil, or atrocity, when in reality they were doing the right thing. Sooner or later, the truth will come out. I believe all truth is important, no matter how uncomfortable it may be, and truth will play an important role in manifesting the kingdom of God. As usual, our national government remains in a precarious situation. President Trump, while trying to root out corruption, is attempting to return control of the federal government back into the hands of the American people. Of course, the establishment deep state within both political parties, with backing of the media, are attempting to thwart him at every turn. First it was Russia collusion, then impeachment, then the coronavirus, then fill in the blank. What next? The Democrats were furious over Trump making his own path in dealing with Ukraine instead of following their road of established channels. They have lost political control. Trump knew those channels could not be trusted. The Democrats have concocted a narrative, pulled out of context of the timeline, and have succeeded in getting their vote to impeach. Along party lines, they have slandered and vilified an innocent man. They have accused him of nearly everything but murder, and that they imply when they say the witness needs protection. But they are the ones who are guilty of such crimes. Their hate is real and will continue for him and his supporters. This was an attempted coup against the presidency. After the president was acquitted, he fired those who testified against him, not for revenge, but because it needed to be done. And so the process of removing long-established deep state operatives continues to unfold, or at least we hope so. No matter what Trump does, the Democrats and media will always twist it in order to condemn him in the eyes of the public. Jesus, Trump, and Hitler, how in the world could anybody link these three together? Surely someone must be thinking. How dare anyone defend a terrible dictator like Hitler? Most Christians of the West are conditioned to think that Hitler is the farthest thing from Christianity that is possible. However, I would ask, did you know him personally? Did you ever read any of his actual speeches? Or did you just hear things about him? Well, you are about to get a different story. Here we have three men who were falsely accused while doing well. In the case of Yeshua the Christ, he was accused of blasphemy because he claimed to be God. Quote, then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Matthew 26:65. The Jews had already made up their minds, just as the Democrats have done. Schiff's witness was never called forth. The Pharisees also leveled other charges against Jesus, such as various forms of breaking the Sabbath law. Quote, and he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand, and they watched him whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, and that they might accuse him. And he saith unto the man which had the withered hand, stand forth. And he said unto them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. Mark 3:1-4. The Jews obviously hated him and tried to kill him on many occasions. Quote, after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Judea because the Jews sought to kill him. John 7:1. Quote, some therefore of them of Jerusalem said, is not this he whom they seek to kill? John 7:25. Speaking of killing, isn't it interesting that Pelosi and team celebrated by passing out impeachment pens with the facsimile of a bullet on the end? She spent $15,000 on those pens. President Trump also was accused of all kinds of crimes and misdemeanors, yet no crime was listed. Abuse of power? How vague is that? Obstruction of Congress? What is that? Obstruction is a part of the co-equal powers of the branches of government. They are supposed to obstruct each other if necessary. Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich were accused of all kinds of crimes against humanity, and how well we are all aware of those alleged crimes. The same can be said of the Confederate States of America and how they were demonized for owning slaves. However, does anyone ask, were you there? None of us were there. Establishment schools taught us what to believe. We are not told of all historical accounts. Only certain books written by the conqueror. The history of the world wars is one of the largest of all cover-ups. Obviously, I will be presenting more information on Hitler than Jesus or Trump because I believe it is relevant in revealing the kingdom of God. From the foreword of The Triumph of Reason by Michael Walsh, he says, quote, Adolf Hitler has undoubtedly received more publicity than any other world figure, dead or alive. His persona, that of his political colleagues, his political party, the rise and combined capitalist-communist destruction of the Third Reich, have provided sufficient written material to fell several rainforests. At the latest count, 120,000 different titles, virtually all of it, the preposterous, recycled, one-sided propaganda of the victors. This absence of objectivity is equaled only by the difficulty of discovering firsthand what the German leader actually said or thought. It is as if we sit in a courtroom in which the defendant, defense counsel, and defense witnesses have been excluded. The judge and jury must form an opinion based exclusively on the accusations laid by the prosecution and witnesses for the prosecution. No proof of allegation will be required. They will face no questioning, call none but their own witnesses. Every accusation will be accepted without question. 60 years, and I insert 75 now, of unchallenged distortion, mischievous interpretation, bias, prejudice, the recycling of myths, hearsay, and what do we get? Universal ignorance. An ignorance so profound that I was drawn to this conclusion. Should I invite 20 randomly picked people to provide a brief essay on major points of National Socialist history, I could guarantee two certainties. 20 different answers, mostly provable poppycock. But can't we, the people who suffered the consequences of Europe's most destructive brother war, be trusted to examine the whole evidence and form our own conclusions? If Hitler's Mein Kampf, and only the Bible has sold more copies this century, his speeches and opinions are the rantings of a madman, as is claimed, why are they not readily available so that we can judge for ourselves? It is because the victor's lies cannot bear the cold light of objectivity, end quote from Michael Walsh. A great point. Why can't we study the history and judge for ourselves? In examining the world wars, we must look into both World War I and World War II. Actually, they are one war in two stages. This context will help our understanding of why Germany did what she did. Let us begin with the New World Order timeline, and I've provided in part of it. It was from Tomato Bubble. It actually goes back to 1848. But we're starting with 1905. The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion is published. Russian professor Sergei Nilas publishes a full version of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, a controversial document discovered a few years earlier. The protocols are alleged to be the minutes of a secret meeting of Jewish elites in which a master plan for world domination to be completed over the next 100 years is laid out in chilling detail. The protocols tell of Jewish control of world banking, world media, communism, liberalism, and political parties of every type. The master plot includes plans to destroy the Catholic Church and all Christianity, promote atheism, wage class warfare, labor against management, overthrow Tsarist Russia, corrupt the morals of the people, promote senseless modern art and dirty literature, use anti-Semitism to keep lesser Jews cohesive, manipulate women with ideas of liberation, create economic depressions and inflations, create controlled oppositions to themselves, use state debt as a weapon to enslave countries, subvert and control all existing governments, install tainted politicians that can be blackmailed, manipulate college students with phony idealism, assassinate world leaders, spread deadly disease, use balance of power politics to control nations, commit acts of terrorism, promote sports and games to divert the population, start a world war, which will include the USA, set up world government after an economic crash. And haven't we seen most of these in this list? Some allege that the protocols were forged by Russian security agents in order to convince the Tsar Nicholas II of the New World Order's existence. Although the authenticity of the document remains in question, world events of the coming decades will match the protocols so closely that the document becomes a worldwide sensation during the 1920s and 30s. Forgery or not, whoever wrote it had an unusual knowledge. 1908, the King and Crown Prince of Portugal are assassinated. 1911, Prime Minister of Russia is assassinated. 1914, the Archduke of Austria-Hungary is murdered. 1916 is a dirty backroom deal. By December 1916, the Central Powers have a clear advantage in the war. France has suffered horrible losses. Russia is facing internal red revolutionary chaos. Britain is under U-boat blockade, and not one square inch of Germany has been occupied. Germany offers generous peace terms. Kaiser Wilhelm is willing to just call off the war and return to how things were. Chaim Weizmann and Nathan Sokolow approach the British with a dirty deal. The Zionists offer to use their international influence to bring the U.S. into the war on Britain's side, while undermining Germany from within. The price Britain must pay for U.S. entry is to steal Palestine from Ottoman Turkey, which was a German ally, and allow the Jews to settle there. Though the official declaration of British support for a Jewish homeland is not to be made public until 1917, the agreement was in fact reached in December of 1916. Soon after that, Zionist agitated anti-German propaganda was unleashed in the U.S., while the Zionists and Marxists of Germany begin to undermine Germany's war effort from within. 1918, the Tsar of Russia is murdered. Tsar Nicholas II, his wife Alexandra, his four daughters and young son are being held under house arrest by Bolshevik revolutionaries, communist Jews. As a boy, Nicholas had witnessed the bombing murder of his grandfather, Nicholas II, in 1881. Nicholas's tragic error was failing to execute the Reds, such as Lenin and Trotsky, after their failed revolution in 1905. On the evening of July 1617, the royal Romanov family is awakened at 2 a.m., told to dress, then herded into the cellar of the house. Moments later, Jewish Reds storm in and gun down the entire family, their doctor, and three servants in cold blood. Some of the daughters are stabbed and clubbed to death when initial gunfire fails to kill them. News of the murder sends shockwaves throughout Russia and Europe. What if an event similar to this happened to America? Would we be taken down the communist abyss as Christian Russia was turned into the USSR? That's my comment. Continuing, the Comintern was soon established in Moscow, calling for the creation of an international Soviet republic, or world government, you might say. From 1918 to 1922, Comintern-affiliated parties form in France, Italy, China, Germany, Spain, Belgium, the U.S., and other nations. All communists operate under the direction of the Moscow Reds, who are financed by the same globalist Zionist bankers that created the Federal Reserve and plotted the Great War. The Red Terror begins on September 2nd at the orders of Lenin and Trotsky to intimidate their white adversaries into submission. It is marked by mass arrests in the middle of the night, executions, and hideously creative tactics of torture. As many as 100,000 Russians are murdered by the Jewish-run Cheka, that's the secret police. 1919 through 1920, Paris Peace Conference changes the world. The Paris Peace Conference is the meeting of the Allied victors to determine the new borders and punishments for the defeated nations. This budding globo-Zionist world government devises a series of treaties that will reshape Europe and the world. At its center are the leaders of the three great powers, Woodrow Wilson, that's the U.S., Prime Minister David Lloyd George, that's the U.K., and George's Clemenceau of France. Germany is not invited and will have no say in the final decisions. The power-mad globalists dismantle existing nations and create new ones. The Austro-Hungarian and Ottoman empires cease to exist, as their disparate peoples are assigned to other states. The conference also creates the framework for the future world government, the League of Nations. A Zionist delegation is also present. They had brought America into the war, and now it is time to collect payment for services rendered, which is the Balfour Declaration. Former Arab territories of the Ottoman Empire are separated from Turkish rule and broken up into small states. Palestine is to become a British protectorate. The Zionist statement establishes the Jewish people's title to the land of Israel, guaranteed by the League of Nations, as Herschel had predicted. Jews from all over the world may now immigrate to Palestine. The Arabs of Palestine were never consulted and are very angry. June 28, 1919, Germany gang-raped by Treaty of Versailles. The Paris Peace Conference issues the infamous Treaty of Versailles. Even liberal establishment historians recognize the cruelty of the treaty. With Germany disarmed by its new government and with no German representatives present, the globalists and Zionists proceed to rape a German nation whose Kaiser did not want war, had tried to avert war, and offered to make peace after the war had begun. The treaty contains 440 clauses, 414 of which are dedicated towards punishing Germany. Among the key provisions that Germany is forced to accept at gunpoint are: Germany accepts 100% responsibility for the war. German armed forces restricted to 100,000 men. The industrial German Rhineland will be occupied by French troops for the next 15 years. Kaiser Wilhelm, safely exiled away in Holland, is to be tried for offenses against international morality. The German region of West Prussia is carved out and given to Poland. Millions of West Prussians are forcefully expelled from their homes, and East Prussia is left cut off from the rest of the German mainland. The German Sudetenland region is stripped away and given to the newly created nation of Czechoslovakia. The newly formed state of Austria is forbidden from uniting with their German-speaking brothers in Germany. Germany is stripped of her African colonies. Britain, France, and Belgium take them over. The coal-rich Saar region of Germany is placed under League of Nations control for 15 years. During this time, its coal is to be shipped to France. The important Baltic Sea port of Danzig is separated from Germany and declared a free city. Germany is ordered to pay massive war reparations in the form of money and natural resources. The crushing burden of the payments, almost $1 trillion in modern currency, will devastate the German economy and soon cause a hyperinflationary monetary collapse. The inhumane Treaty of Versailles breeds resentment and anger in Germany for many years to come. And you can certainly see why, right? 1922, Russian Civil War ends in Red Victory. At the conclusion of the Red Terror, Red Famine, and Red-White Civil War in 1922, Lenin and Trotsky formally established the Soviet Union with its capital city in Moscow. The former Russian Empire is now known as the USSR. The communist giant spans the Eurasian landmass. The well-known criminal brutality of the Soviets shocks the world, as do the communist declarations to overthrow all other nations. For these reasons, three consecutive Republican presidents, Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, will refuse to diplomatically recognize the Soviet Union. January 11, 1923, France invades Germany. More than 4 years have passed since Germany's complete and total surrender at the end of the Great War. The poverty and hunger-stricken German nation is having difficulty in making the massive reparations extortion payments imposed by the Treaty of Versailles. Having already destroyed the value of Germany's currency, the Allies now demand to be paid in timber and coal. Allied troops move in for a shakedown. In a further humiliation of an already occupied Germany, 60,000 troops from Belgium, France, and the French African colonies expand the occupation into the defenseless Ruhr. That's an industrial region of Germany. While German children go hungry, the Allies collect their stolen loot of physical German commodities. Machine gun posts are set up in the streets as Allied troops take food and supplies from German shopkeepers. Other than to stage passive demonstrations, there is nothing that the disarmed and hungry Germans can do about this latest French outrage. 1923, the high inflation worsens in Germany. With Allied troops occupying the Ruhr, the German mark losing its value, Germany goes through a horrific hyperinflation. The socialist Weimar government and the Warburg-Rothschild Central Bank resort to massively expanding the money supply, mostly to cover the crushing debt imposed by the Versailles Treaty, and also to keep the Weimar Republic socialist welfare state afloat. Makes you wonder if that's going to happen here, pushing money into the economy. The life savings of the German people is wiped out as prices double every 2 days for 20 straight months. Workers are paid daily so that they may go food shopping before prices double again. Some Germans refer to their devalued money as Jewish confetti. This leads to more chaos and another attempt by the communists to stage a revolution. As they had during the war, the Marxist trade unions call for strikes at a time when Germany is most vulnerable. To pacify the striking workers, the Weimar Reichsbank pumps even more paper money into the economy. February 27, 1933, Red Terrorists set fire to the Reichstag. 4 weeks after Hitler's appointment as Chancellor, angry Reds set the Reichstag on fire. Local police catch a Dutch communist named Marinus van der Lubbe on the premises. He had just arrived in Germany a few weeks earlier. The fire was to have been the start of the Red-instigated civil war, aimed at toppling the crumbling Weimar state before Hitler and NSDAP can establish themselves. Hindenburg and Hitler act fast. Emergency decrees are issued and communist leaders are rounded up. The Red Revolution backfires. Instead of plunging Germany into civil war, the Reichstag fire starts a chain of events that leads to the Enabling Act and Hitler's consolidation of power. NSDAP, NSDAP, becomes Germany's only party as the Weimar Republic of Versailles is replaced by the Third Reich, led by the Führer. Führer means leader. Modern historians promote the theory that Hitler staged the fire himself and then blame the Reds for it. There is no evidence at all to support this theory, a baseless claim that ignores both the violent history as well as the standard destabilization tactics that communists are known for. 1933, Hitler defies the New World Order. Like FDR, Hitler came into true authoritative power in March 1933. Like FDR, Hitler inherited an economic disaster. Like FDR, Hitler's first 100 days in office are known for a flurry of determined activity. But the similarities end there. Whereas FDR is implementing all the globalist economic and foreign policy plans, Hitler is openly defying the architects of the New World Order with the following policies. Here's what he does. Pulls Germany out of the League of Nations. Bans the Communist Party and arrests its leaders. Replaces national Marxist trade unions with company unions. Establishes NSDAP as Germany's only political party. Refuses to make reparation payments of Versailles Treaty. Takes control of Germany's Reichsbank from Warburg and Rothschild and issues debt-free currency. Restricts Jewish ownership of radio and newspapers. Cuts taxes and provides tax incentives for mothers to stay home and raise children. Rebuilds German infrastructure and initiates projects like the Autobahn highway system, financed by debt-free notes paid to the workers. The globalists have lost control of Germany. And this is the end of the timeline, quote. This is why Hitler had to be stopped. Will it be the same for Trump? Next, I want to give a brief overview of Germany. In the 19th century, when no other country in Europe would let the Jews in, Germany did. In fact, they let everybody in, not just Jews. You could say that Germany was compassionate, tolerant, and one of the first multicultural countries of modern times. At the turn of the 20th century, the Jews had it made in Germany. Statistics show that Jews had the highest unemployment rate in leading positions, often as high as 60% of the jobs, while they were only 1% of the population. They controlled Germany. In contrast, millions of Germans were unemployed. Over 1 million starved to death after World War I. The Versailles Treaty had virtually raped Germany by demands of cash and natural resources in an attempt to punish them for the war. The German economy was out of control with inflation, and the Jews, of course, ran the banks. In 1933, the Jewish-led Communist Party, with its millions of members, was defeated. By this time, Soviet imperialism had gained much success through its terrorism and deliberate starvation in the Ukraine to cause Russians to submit to Stalin's will. 5 million Ukrainians were starved to death in what was called the Holodomor. This took place 1932-33. The Britannica estimates 8 million overall. Germany did not want a similar fate to fall upon them. With victory over the Communist Party, Hitler was appointed Chancellor of the Third Reich. This signaled unfavorable political changes for the Jews who seized power in Germany after World War I. Although the Zionists worked with the National Socialists to restore the German economy after they had destroyed it with interest, debt, and taxation, they used the transfer agreement to allow Jews, with their pockets stuffed with cash, to immigrate to Palestine. They were able to succeed by creating and lying a fear campaign against the new Nazi Party. Note here, short for National Socialist German Workers' Party is the German abbreviation NSDAP, which I've been pronouncing as NSDAP. Germans did not use this term of Nazi. They use NSDAP, but as English, we use the term Nazi. It doesn't have to be necessarily a derogatory term. Thus, 50,000 Jews were relocated before the war started, resulting in the rise of Zionism. By the way, Hitler did have a plan, a final solution to the Jewish problem in Germany. It was not extermination, as we have been told. His plan was a homeland in Madagascar, complete with financial aid from Germany. Jews declare war. We have all been taught or programmed to believe that World War II began on September 1, 1939, with an allegedly unprovoked attack upon Poland. That myth, which has been passed off as truth for over 75 years, is very easily debunked. Germany acted legally and ethically in retaliating against Polish acts of aggression, which led to the war. World War II actually started in 1933, by the Jews. Hitler's election meant interruption of and interference with the world's commercial and political system, which world Jewry dominated. When the National Socialists came to power, the Jews were in complete control of Russia. They were very powerful in the United States, Britain, and France. They dominated nearly every institution in Germany. Hitler stood alone in his defiance of Jewish communism that threatened to sweep over Europe. Having seized control of Russia, which they used as a base, Jewish communists were behind all the civil unrest throughout the West, including the United States. The Jews did not wait for him to begin acting against Jewish interests in Germany. They made a preemptory strike. Bernard Lukács, president of the Jewish World League, declared at the time, quote, "Germany is our public enemy number one. It is our object to declare war without mercy against her," end quote. On March 12, 1933, 11 days before the passage of the Enabling Act, which gave all power to Hitler, and well before any action of any kind had been taken against Jews, the American Jewish Congress announced a massive anti-Nazi protest to take place on March 27th at Madison Square Garden in New York City. The Commander-in-Chief of Jewish War Veterans called for an American boycott of German goods. On March 23, a protest rally of 20,000 Jews was staged in front of New York City's Hall. Rallies were also staged outside the North German Lloyd and Hamburg American shipping lines in New York, and boycotts were organized against German goods and in businesses throughout New York City. Up to this point, not a finger had been lifted against the Jews in Germany. Not a single measure had been taken against them. All of the hysterical anti-German activity by the Jews was only in anticipation of what the Nazis might do. On March 24, 1933, one day after Hitler became Chancellor, the Daily Express of London carried the headline proclaiming that Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of all the world unite in action. Boycott of German goods. Mass demonstrations. End quote. Of course, Germany felt betrayed after showing compassion and hospitality to the Jews for so many years. And there you have a picture of that newspaper carrying that story. Quote, "The Israeli people around the world declare economic and financial war against Germany. 14 million Jews stand together as one man to declare war against Germany. The Jewish wholesaler will forsake his firm, the banker his stock exchange, the merchant his commerce, and the pauper his pitiful shed in order to join together in a holy war against Hitler's people," end quote from the Daily Express, March 24, 1933. Quote, "Each of you, Jew and Gentile alike, who has not already enlisted in this sacred war, should do so now and here. It is not sufficient that you should buy no goods made in Germany. You must refuse to deal with any merchant or shopkeeper who sells any German-made goods or who patronizes German ships or shipping. We will undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their export trade on which their very existence depends." end quote from Samuel Untermeyer in a radio broadcast. And this is a very bad time for Germany for them to do this. They were vulnerable. Germany was financially attacked, unprovoked and unfairly, by communist Jews of the West, starting with this boycott, and their comrades of Bolshevism stood at the back door to the East with a military threat. Hitler's intent was to protect Germany and their European brethren from Soviet assimilation. Hitler was 100% correct in removing the Jews and others from power. After his reforms, the economy revived and Germany became the economic wonder of the world. While the entire world suffered under the 1929 stock market crash in the U.S., Germany prospered as if it had never happened. Because of this boycott, there was some violence against the Jews, but not at the orders of the German government. 4 days later, the Chancellor launched his own one-day boycott of Jewish businesses. There was to be, quote, composure, discipline, and no violence. Don't even hurt as much as a hair on a Jew's head, end quote, from Hitler. Quote, the Jewish war on Germany caused the Germans to clamp down even harder on Jews living in Germany, which in turn produced even shriller wailing amongst international Jewry. On September 29, 1933, Jews were banned from all cultural and entertainment activities, including literature, art, film, and theater. Hitler had spoken many times about the endless filth coming out of the Jewish film, theater, and entertainment industries, but also about the insidious Jewish effort to undermine German culture by ridiculing German morals, values, traditions, and by their attacks upon Christianity. He was determined to put an end to it. In October of 1933, Jews were barred from journalism and all newspapers were placed under government control. Hitler's intent was to break the Jewish hold on German institutions and to encourage them to emigrate out of Germany, not to harm them. This quote was from Brenton Bradbury in his book, Triumph of Reason. Samuel Untermeyer's inflammatory speech was a blatant misrepresentation of what was happening in Germany. His claims of Nazi atrocities against Jews were simply not true. Untermeyer described Nazism as a curse that has descended upon benighted Germany, which has thereby been converted from a nation of culture into a veritable hell of cruel and savage beasts, end quote. Untermeyer's speech was a turning point speech. It was the first to accuse Nazi Germany of the intention to exterminate the Jewish people. This was 1933. No such threat had ever been made by anyone in Germany. The German government protested his speech, but it fell on deaf ears in America and Britain, who had already been conditioned to believe the worst about Germany as a result of the relentless anti-German propaganda from the Jewish press since 1921. Untermeyer spoke of the fiendish torture and cruelty Jews were being subjected to every day in Germany, and of terrors worse than death. Nothing of the kind was happening in Germany, except in his own hateful imagination. Untermeyer referred in the early part of his speech to the holy war in the cause of humanity in which we are embarked. He described the Jews as the aristocrats of the world. He made a call to action. Quote, each of you, Jew and Gentile alike, who has not already enlisted in this sacred war, should do so now and here, end quote. Those Jews who did not wish to join in this holy war, he denounced, declaring, quote, they are traitors to their race. National Socialism. The National Socialists under Adolf Hitler correctly addressed the causes and provided solutions so that the German people could begin to pull themselves back up out of the mud to prosperity, freedom, and a cultural rebirth of their once great nation. speaking of pre-World War I. Most people are taught that Hitler illegally seized power and overthrew the Weimar Republic against the will of the people, and that he was a brutal dictator. The fact is, nothing was changed in the Weimar Constitution, and Germany was already an oppressed nation, as was Austria. Hitler's rise to power was the culmination of 13 years of hard-fought, legal, democratic struggle, in which he and the NSDAP, that's the National Socialist German Workers' Party, it's the German abbreviation, fought with their own resources as a truly grassroots movement for liberty and lasting change. They were tired of the empty promises from other leaders and parties. Hitler's NSDAP government was truly a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Hitler was legally and duly appointed as chancellor after the NSDAP had legally won the majority of votes in a national election. The socialism used in Germany was not the same as we think of socialism today in America. It is Marxian socialism, or communism, for all intents and purposes. Hitler commented on this, quote, "A socialist is one that serves the common good without giving up his individuality or personality or the product of his personal efficiency. Our adopted term, socialist, has nothing to do with Marxian socialism. Marxism is anti-property. True socialism is not. Marxism places no value on the individual or individual effort or efficiency. True socialism values the individual and encourages him in individual efficiency, at the same time holding that his interests as an individual must be in consonance with those of the community. All great inventions, discoveries, achievements were first the product of an individual brain. It is charged against me that I am against property, that I am an atheist. Both charges are false." End quote. Therefore, socialism done properly can be a good thing for the nation as a whole. In fact, America already has certain socialist policies in use. Social Security, for example, food stamps, college loans, and so forth. The differences between National Socialism and Communism were quite profound. The most obvious difference was that National Socialism supported the concept of private property and a free market economy, while Communism abolished private property and the government controlled the economy through central planning. Under National Socialism, the means of production was for the most part in private hands, albeit guided by the state. Under communism, all private property, including farmland, manufacturing, or the means of production, and even private housing, were seized by the state. The only similarity between the two systems was that both were totalitarian. Although between the two, National Socialism was much more benign in that the rights of private citizens were respected and protected. Under communism, there were no private rights. The two systems were also different in their aims. National Socialism was a revolutionary movement in defense of Western Christian civilization, while communism was a revolutionary movement dedicated to its destruction. My conclusion: Jesus, Trump, and Hitler have been accused of all sorts of evil things that were not true, and they will do the same to us Christians, especially those of Christian identity. But we should make sure those accusations are false on moral and scriptural grounds. Quote, "Happy are those who are attacked on account of righteousness, for the kingdom of heaven will be theirs. Happy are you when men give you a bad name and are cruel to you, and say all evil things against you falsely because of me. Be glad and full of joy, for great is your reward in heaven. For so were the prophets attacked who were before you." Matthew 5:10-12 of the Basic English Version. Matthew Henry said of this passage, quote, "Those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake are happy. This is the greatest paradox of all and peculiar to Christianity, and therefore it is put last and more largely insisted upon than any of the rest of the Beatitudes. It is not the suffering, but the cause that makes the martyr. Those suffer for righteousness' sake, who suffer because they will not sin against their consciences, who suffer for doing that which is good." End quote. Hitler suffered for righteousness' sake. I have often said in conversations with others, we may be surprised at what we find in heaven or the kingdom. Those we expected might be absent, and those we least expected will be there. Just imagine how some would feel upon reaching the gates of heaven, and there at the top is a family crest which displays a swastika. As the Jews plotted the crucifixion of Jesus, so we could also say they crucified Hitler. And we could say that the leading Democrats, Jews, are trying to crucify President Trump. Yet Trump trumps everything that is thrown at him so far. Now Trump is not a saint, nor is he a man of God, but he is God's man and has come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Never has the helm of the ship of state been steered away from the shoals and toward its Christian founding than under President Trump. He is the real whistleblower trying to root out corruption. Indictments need to come for the real criminals. Although there are policies we do not agree with him regarding the Israeli state, we should give credit where it is due and pray that he will be turned from his deception concerning support for the Israeli. I do not intend to vote in the election because I'm an idealist. I never liked voting the lesser of two evils. I cannot support with a vote one who gives aid to our Jewish enemy. Voting implies there is a political solution to America's problems. But there is no political solution. Only by keeping the laws of our God will America come into greatness again. Hitler did not succeed in every way, but he did successfully drain the swamp in Germany. He cleaned up the pornography in Berlin and brought Christian values back into vogue. He removed homosexuals, Masons, and Jews from their positions of power. His policies of responsible debt, low taxes, debt-free currency, and a business-friendly environment were the secret of his economic recovery, the most stunning in world history. He may have lost the war, but his fortitude saved all of Europe from Soviet conquest simply by being a roadblock to their advancing armies. Hitler was a sacrificial lamb for his people. Preach the gospel. We who know the truth should make this history known. Who else can do it but Christian identity? We are the most qualified to do it. We know good and well that establishment Judeo-Churchianity will not touch this subject with a 10-foot pole. It would mean not only changing their churches, but also changing their seminaries, libraries, and thus their commentaries, theological treatises, and statements of faith. And of course, they fear being called a Nazi or anything that smacks of racism. We of CI do not care. Therefore, the challenge is ours. By the way, if the slang word Nazi means hatred, then the Jews are Nazis, for they are the epitome of hatred because they want to eliminate all races of the world and rule over the inferior one brown race that remains. This is truly genocide. The Germans, on the other hand, did not hate all other races or want to rule the world, but they cared for their racial brothers and hated only one group, the Jews, and for good reason. This was not genocide. Furthermore, whites do not like to be called Nazis any more than blacks like to be called niggers, when these words are used in a derogatory way. Can we be polite, or are we going to ban the N-words? With the political climate of today, is there a more opportune time to be heard? It is time to break the silence concerning the world wars and let this unpopular truth be known. The public should know that fake news did not originate with President Trump. Revealing the real history of the world wars is critical to breaking Jewish hegemony in the world. This is a big step in manifesting the kingdom of our Lord in America. It is a most difficult issue to break for people so thoroughly brainwashed for so long a time. And how was this done? Consider controlled media, only radio and newspapers at first. Now we have more. Either owned or controlled by Jews. Official government narrative taught in schools and colleges as true historic fact for over 75 years. Holidays such as Independence Day, Memorial Day, and Veterans Day are always used to bring up reflections of World War II. These veterans are known as the last of the great generation. Television shows, documentaries, children's programs, news, and ads such as The History Channel, The Sound of Music, Schindler's List, and Hogan's Heroes. Even many in conservative and alternative patriot media have succumbed to this conditioning. Many of them referring to evil cite the name of Hitler as if he were a synonym for Satan. Do you see how important this is to the Jew? They must continually keep this false narrative before us, reminding us never again, usually in reference to the alleged Holocaust. So what is the best way to approach the subject when it comes up? I simply respond, Hitler was not near as bad as we've been told. Then I continue from there as time permits. Breaking the silence on the world wars falls to the church. It is critical in breaking Jewish control and dominance over Christian civilization. Our motto, truth against the world. These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. End quote from John 16:33. To be continued.